Hello, and welcome to another episode of Artifacts. If you are new to this podcast, I am your host, Rachel Wilson. My goal is to provide listeners with a brief blast of history and/or science that offers background information and answers questions I had about the topic. It's my hope that listening stirs up great conversation for kids, families, and adults too. I also hope listening motivates you to chase after what you are curious about. If you would like to leave me comments, ask a question, or have an idea of a topic you would like to hear about, feel free to drop me a line at artifactspodcast@gmail.com. For more information about this episode, including a list of sources, please visit artifactspodcasthome.wordpress.com. This episode's artifact is the automaton. Auto is a Greek prefix that means self. Automaton is Greek for a mechanical device that works by itself or acting of one's own will. Automata often imitate life by mechanical means, but without electronics. Recently, while taking a couple of day trips with my family, I've run across a large number of examples of automata. In this episode, I'm going to explain what automata is, how it works, its history, where I've seen it, and how you can make one of your own. Now, in case you haven't heard this word before or you're having trouble placing an image, I will briefly explain this device. Think of a cuckoo bird on a cuckoo clock. Picture this. You have a rod passing through a box horizontally. A round disc is threaded through the rod and is seated in the middle of the rod. This disc is called a cam. Another rod is perpendicular to the horizontal rod. It too has a round disc threaded onto it. This disc is called the cam follower. As the cam's rod is turned, it causes the vertical rod to move up and down, and maybe even side to side, depending on the position of the cam. You have a simple machine working to move the vertical rod, which may have an animal or person attached to it that seems to be moving on its own, because all of the simple machinery that I just explained is hidden inside a box. So all you see is the figure that's moving on top. Or in the case of the cuckoo clock, you see the cuckoo bird coming out of the cuckoo clock. Tomato, tomato. The real pronunciation of the plural form of this word is automata. I've been pronouncing it wrong all the way through here, according to some people. I'm not going to go through and try to splice some edits in since I'm just figuring this podcasting out. I'm going to leave it in. Please just bear with me. Automata. So where in history did this technology originate was my next question, and I was surprised to find that the idea of automata has been around for a really long time. It originated in Greece and China. In fact, the earliest full-length book of Greek robots was called On Automatic Theaters, On Pneumatics, and On Mechanics, and it was written by the inventor Hero or Heron of Alexandria in about 85 CE. As I looked through my research, what I found was the golden age of automata was from 1860s to 1910, which when you think about it makes a lot of sense. There were a lot of inventions happening during this time. In the 1830s, you have zoetropes. Those are those moving pictures. There's a cylinder that has slits in it that you're looking into, and on the inside there are discs that have drawings of, could be maybe a horse, that's each image is slightly different from the one before it. So when you're rotating the disc very quickly and looking in through the slits, it looks like the horse is moving. 1840s, photography is introduced. 1860s, the wind-up clockwork technology is used in toys. The 1870s to 1880s, you've got telephones, light bulbs, automobiles, phonographs, carousels. In the 1890s, you have that really cool player piano, where if you open up the doors to the front of the piano, you can see that there is a reel of paper that is dictating which keys are playing at what time. The 1920s, is where we see the word robot appear for the first time. A Czech writer by the name of Karel Čapek used the word in his play Rossum's Universal Robots, also known as RUR. And in 1927, we have the first film to depict a robot. So I saw marvelous examples of vintage, antique, and artsy versions of automata in two very unique places in the last week. The first was House on the Rock. Now, I have lived in Wisconsin for nearly 20 years, and yet this is one tourist attraction I had not visited. Sure, many people have talked about touring it, and I've driven by it many times. I have to say, nothing really prepared me for this visit. If you want your 10,000 steps, this place is sure to help you out. It is 2.5 miles if you do all three parts of the attraction. This tourist attraction isn't exactly a museum, but it is definitely a sight to behold. It's something that you'll be talking about for days. If you or someone you like to travel with doesn't enjoy reading plaques and signage, you may want to try out this wacky collection of collections. It's located near Spring Green. It's about 40 miles from Madison. In my opinion, it's part amusement park, part natural history museum, part American history museum, and a whole lot of weird. The House on the Rock was built by Alex Jordan from the 1960s to the 1980s. He discovered a 60-foot chimney of rock in Wyoming Valley. The rock is a sandstone formation called Deer Shelter Rock. Rumor has it, it was built to spite Frank Lloyd Wright, who lived only minutes away in his home called Taliesin. From what I've read, this isn't really true. Alex Jordan Jr. first began building with his own hands. He did climb up the chimney daily with building materials on his shoulders. But here's where it already gets a little bit strange. Alex never lived in the house. Instead, he lived in Madison in a two-room apartment his whole life. He just filled the House on the Rock with his unique collections. In 1959, Jordan placed a marker on Highway 23 advertising the house. He was kind of annoyed with all the people that wanted to visit it, so he thought if he started charging people that maybe that would keep people from coming. So in 1959, visitors paid 50 cents to come and visit his collections. Well, it actually took off, and he made so much money that he could continue building on his collections. When I first arrived, I noticed the beautiful setting of the forest and the odd sculptures. It really does remind me of approaching a ride at a theme park. But the foyer is really large and sweeping. It's sparsely furnished. It has a beautiful rock waterfall in it. There's a lovely view. It doesn't seem like it's going to be all that tricky of a visit. I had heard that it was unique, and I was waiting for the uniqueness. So it's in the foyer that you buy your tickets. There are three choices. The ultimate package runs you about $30 per adult, and for children's ages 4 to 17, it's about $15.95. They are open daily in the summer from 9 to 4, and I do recommend that you buy the ultimate experience so you can see all three sections in one day, and you pretty much don't ever have to come back if you don't want to. You can try out some of the automata with the included tokens that come with that ultimate experience. At first, when you're walking towards the gatehouse, it's like, well, this is really no big deal. But once you're inside it, you're surrounded by wall-to-wall carpet that even extends to the ceiling, a musty smell that kind of reminds me of my grandmother's basement, and a dimly lit low ceiling pathway that suddenly makes me very thankful that I'm not all that tall. One of the neatest rooms in terms of architecture is the Infinity Room. It's 218 feet long, and it's a room that extends off the building and tapers to a point that's 156 feet above the forest floor. It has glass sides with 3,064 windows. At the very end is a mirror, so at the tapered end is a mirror to give the illusion that the room goes beyond. It kind of reminds me when I was a little kid and would sit on the vanity in my bathroom. I had a medicine chest that had a mirror on it, and then there was also a big mirror that was behind the sink. And I remember as a little kid, opening up the medicine chest just enough and kind of looking in there and being amazed by how it just seemed like it went on and on and on, that reflection of one mirror into the other. On this self-guided tour, you're going to see the management proclaimed largest indoor carousel with 20,000 lights, 182 chandeliers, 269 animals, and yet not one horse. There are plenty of them hanging nearby, but on the carousel are all kinds of mixed up animals. And by the way, you can't ride the carousel because every one of those animals has a doll dressed in Victorian garb sitting on it. Jordan's collections included some real antiques, some fake, and many fantastical items. Items originally had explanations and interpretation tags on them. And if you remember, I said, if you're not somebody that really likes to read all of that when you're at a museum, this might be just the place for you, because in the late 1970s, a state investigation was conducted and all claims of authenticity and provenance, which is the record of previous known ownership, were removed. Jordan promised never to put anything like that up again. There were so many lies and stretches of truth. His collection does include Titanic memorabilia, Scrimshaw designs, Fabergé eggs, butterflies, weapons, dollhouses, numerous miniature circuses complete with audiences in the stands, and circus trains. And then he's got some pretty wild stuff. 4-story tall display of a 200-foot long sea monster that's fighting a giant squid and has teeth, fangs even. And inside his giant gaping mouth is a little boat that's nearly destroyed. There's also a full orchestra of mannequins playing instruments. And I have to admit, when I came, I was really looking to see that exhibit, I guess you would say. Unfortunately, it is down for repair. I got to see all of the mannequins, the instruments are there, but I couldn't put my token in and have them play me a tune. The Streets of Yesterday is an eerie recreation of a street from an 1800s town. There is one similar that you can see in Milwaukee in a museum there. The organ room with leftover pipes from the Madison Waterworks plant. Throughout the experience, there are automata you can fire up with one of the tokens that came with your price of admission. Before I tell you about the second day trip, let's take a sponsor break. The second place I visited this week was Discovery World Science and Technology Center in Milwaukee. This is a museum, and it's also a day trip that could take you a whole day to really appreciate. Either become a member so you can spread your experience over several days, or plan to arrive around opening time, which is at 9 a.m. because this museum closes at 4 p.m. The general admission fee is $20 for adults and $16 for children 3 to 17. The museum is located next to the Art Museum on the lakefront. I was impressed by all there was to see and do. This is for sure a hands-on museum where you can learn about sound, clean air, virtual reality, physics. They even have an aquarium and you can pet some stingrays. The sections I spent a large amount of time in were the Simple Machine Shipyard and the Automation Everywhere. In the Simple Machine Shipyard, you can race cars with a friend, build a paper rocket, and launch items, and learn about mechanical advantage. One of the memorable activities in Automation Everywhere was using automation to make a foam toy. I chose the dragonfly, while my boys both chose the dragon. You can watch as a laser cuts the shapes out through the foam and a robotic arm moves the sheet of foam to a tray to deliver it to you. It's in this section that you can really explore a variety of simple machines and see some wonderful artistic examples of automata. In case you are the builder tinker type, I did some research for you and found 2 sites online that offer plans for making your own automaton with minimal supplies. You will need a cardboard box, some bamboo skewers, hot glue, and a straw. I tested out the designs and I do have a couple of tips for you. 1. finding thick foam sheets can be very tricky. I found that cardboard worked just as well, if not better, because you can't really substitute thin foam instead of the thick foam. Your cam and followers will not be sturdy enough, and it's going to warp and bend, and that's going to be frustrating. Two, the plans call for a box that is 15 by 15 centimeters or 6 by 6 inches. You may not have a box that meets those specific measurements, but keep in mind the length of your skewer, because the skewer has to pass through both ends of the box with some room to wiggle. They have to not only pass through the box, they have to stick out on either side, and there's got to be enough clearance for your crank too. Third and finally, if you choose one of the other classic motions, which I tried to do, besides up and down, you may have to modify your straw, which is the bushing for the cam follower. We found that even using a skinny drinking straw was allowing too much wiggle room, and often the cam follower was slipping away from the cam. So just keep that in mind when you're building. I would love to hear what your thoughts are on either of these attractions. If you've ever been to them, what did you think of them? Would you recommend them to others? And I would especially love to see any of your automata creations.